On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're doing a roundup of legislation with Representative Gordon Hintz. We're asking questions about bills in different stages, including legislation on gun control, medical cannabis, and chronic wasting disease. How do you want to see lawmakers approach this week's special session on gun safety bills? Do you think decriminalizing some amounts of marijuana is a step forward for Wisconsin, or is this the wrong move? We're at 800-642-1234. Representative Gordon Hintz is the Assembly Minority Leader. He's a Democrat representing Wisconsin's 54th Assembly District, which includes Oshkosh. Representative Hintz, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Glad to be here, Kate.
Well, let's start with the special session this week. Governor Evers called for the legislature to take up a pair of gun control laws Thursday. And we've heard from Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, who've said they won't hold votes on these bills. So as Assembly Minority Leader, how will you approach this special session?
Well, I mean, the governor has made this a major priority. I think people across Wisconsin have this as a major priority. I mean, to most of the state, this isn't a partisan issue. And we're talking about going forward with common sense measures supported by the public that balance Second Amendment rights that have been demonstrated in other states to reduce the risk of gun violence. And so we're going to call attention to it. I think there are validators from around the state, from law enforcement to victims to advocates, who want to know that their state is doing everything possible to reduce these incidents of gun violence from people that are either going to harm others or may harm themselves.
So knowing Republican lawmakers might not be interested in a red flag law or universal background check laws, why do you think the governor wanted to call this special session?
Because it's that important. I mean, we shouldn't have to wait for another mass shooting or shouldn't have to have communities throughout the state live in fear. I mean, if we can ask kids in elementary schools to do active shooting drills, we should have leaders in the legislature be willing to examine what are the measures that we can do to, again, reduce access to firearms for those who may harm themselves or harm others. I mean, the idea that we will allow violent criminals to have access to firearms with no background check and not close that loophole that other states have, explain that to parents. If Republicans don't want to be serious about these things, then explain to the parents and the families and the communities around the state why you think it's more important to stop violent criminals from accessing firearms than protecting our families and our children.
Where do you see common ground here between lawmakers on gun safety legislation?
Well, this would have been a good start. I mean, they should be having hearings on these bills. And if there's feedback or things that we can do to make them more acceptable, they should consider that. But, you know, these bills aren't partisan bills in other states. So the state of Indiana, for instance, whose legislature is, you know, overwhelmingly Republican, you know, they passed an extreme risk protection order bill, allows for a court to do a temporary removal of firearms for those that are determined to be a threat to themselves or others. They passed this more than a decade ago, and same with Florida and other red states. So it's only partisan in Wisconsin, where there seem to be, you know, legislators that may be more interested in denying Governor Evers any sort of meaningful bill passage that would be popular with the public.
Let's bring in Jeff now in Delafield, who has thoughts on this. Hi, Jeff.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My question is in regards to so-called red flag laws. On the surface, they sound good and they sound sensible, but how is a law crafted so that over the next years, decades, whatever, it doesn't become a tool where one group can simply use it to basically, for lack of a better word, attack another group that they don't agree with? So what exactly triggers a so-called red flag event, and how is it ensured that that's not going to be used simply to basically harm somebody that somebody else doesn't agree with?
Jeff, thank you for the call. Representative Hintz, how do you keep checks and balances on red flag laws?
Sure. Well, I can tell you that the way the bill has been drafted by the administration or by Representative Sargent, my colleague in the Assembly, with support from the administration, is certainly balancing both the Second Amendment rights. And I can tell you in the, I believe, 17 states that have passed a red flag law so far, they have held up to constitutional scrutiny. So that's not a an issue there. But there's also a penalty in there for someone that brings forward a red flag challenge who, on frivolous grounds, with an intent not necessarily to protect the public, but just like we do with restraining orders, you petition the court, you go before the judge, and they have the ability to disseminate whether it's, you know, truly going to have, you know, an impact or it's justified or not. And again, you know, it's family, you know, first close family and law enforcement who have that ability. So it's not going to be some group that sits there and pushes to say, well, we're going to deny that gun owner the right to have their firearms. And again, giving the discretion to a judge to be able to apply a criteria to determine that is, I think, the way that we can reassure people like your caller.
We're in the State Capitol Report. We're running down the bills this morning with Assembly Minority Leader Gordon Hintz. He's a Democrat from Oshkosh. You can join in. How do you want lawmakers to shape policy around marijuana? Do you think decriminalizing some amounts of marijuana is a step in the right direction or too far for Wisconsin? 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Anne now from Campbellsport. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I guess I'm asking for some advice. I have contacted my representatives, Dewey Strobel and Tim Ranson, and urged them to attend the special session, just at least to discuss gun regulations. They're refusing to do so. Their minds are made up. They will not cooperate with Governor Evers. I live in a gerrymandered district. There's never an opponent running against these gentlemen. What is my next step? I mean, I feel totally powerless.
Representative Hintz?
Well, you know, I'm sympathetic. And in fact, a lot of the inaction on issues that are important to addressing challenges in our state and reflecting the priorities of the public, unfortunately, are really impacted by gerrymandering, meaning, you know, by having districts drawn the way they are, it's really harder to be accountable to the voters when there's no chance in these districts that you're going to lose your seat. I will say these things. I mean, look, we have an obligation to respond to people. If you're asking about the anti-gun violence measures, make them explain themselves, because there's some pretty lazy defenses out there that I think kind of muddy the waters about what these bills are and what they aren't. And I'm receiving some of those communications myself from groups like the NRA and others who intentionally try to distort that. So these shouldn't be partisan measures. They should be bipartisan. We've got 6 months left of session. And again, I think these things that should be considered, that if there are legitimate questions, let's get those answered and find a way that we can get support for those things. But, you know, until we adjourn, I think we should continue to keep pushing. And I always say, you know, get behind good ideas, try to improve bad ideas, and then try to hold them accountable at the polls if you can't.
We're getting perspective from Assembly Minority Leader Gordon Hintz. How would you suggest Democrats and Republicans find common ground at the Capitol? Where do you think they could find consensus? What do you make of decriminalizing small amounts of marijuana? What about medical cannabis? Join in with your thoughts, your questions, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute, more State Cap to come here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, it's the State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you have a line to Representative Gordon Hintz, the Democrat from Oshkosh. We're exploring bills that he's worked on and hearing about the concerns you have with legislation circulating at the Capitol. What bills are you watching for this session? What does this legislation mean to you? Join in 800-642-1234. and Assembly Minority Leader Gordon Hint stays with us. Representative, Democrats on Wednesday introduced a bill that would decriminalize possessing less than 28 grams of marijuana. Republicans had removed a similar proposal from Governor Evers' budget proposal. How do Democrats plan to move this through the chambers?
Well, again, this is one where 33 states around the country have, you know, legalized marijuana for medical use and or recreational use. And 26 states have decriminalized the possession of small amounts of marijuana. And again, these bills that we're pushing that have the support of the governor have led to outcomes which we ultimately want. In this case, fewer incarcerations for possession, fewer public dollars spent on punitive measures for nonviolent criminals. If you want to make the state safer, if you want to save taxpayer dollars, I mean, this is a long overdue reform, you know, that we should be doing. Our prison population is heading in the wrong direction, despite pretty flat population. If, you know, I'm a big believer in that hearings should be scheduled for bills and that we should have questions answered. And if there are changes that need to be made to garner bipartisan support, let's do that. There's no harm in doing it. But I think the one thing we've seen, especially in this session, is how far behind Wisconsin is in addressing, you know, a lot of issues, you know, related to reforming our laws that regulate marijuana, to issues like decriminalization, which really should be a no-brainer. Many communities throughout the state have already taken those steps.
Oshkosh included has been reforming its marijuana ordinance. How does that inform this conversation around decriminalization?
Well, I think you're seeing communities throughout the state doing what they can, you know, now, and I think that demonstrates there is statewide support in areas, and that should send the signal to Madison that, hey, there are good reasons, proactive reasons why communities are taking things in their own hands. Let's follow their lead.
You co-authored a bill introduced last month that would legalize medical marijuana. What will this bill do?
Sure. It'll be very incremental in terms of you know, taking the first steps to allowing individuals with certain conditions to be treated with the option of medicinal, you know, marijuana. And again, this is something that would really benefit from a hearing to get questions answered from those out there that may not have contemplated this before, questions answered by the medical community regarding their concerns and reservations. But I think, you know, Senator Testen, Republican senator from central Wisconsin, has used the story of, you know, a loved one of his who used, again, marijuana illegally, but it certainly helped with pain and suffering and treatment. And we know that a large percentage of Wisconsinites around the state support this. And so, again, this is something that other states, all of our neighboring states, I believe, have moved forward on, and Wisconsin should do the same.
Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald says legalizing medical marijuana is a slippery slope to full legalization of both medical and recreational marijuana. Do you agree with that? Is it a stepping stone?
No, and that's absurd. I mean, this sounds like some sort of ABC after school special from the 1970s, and I think it just shows how out of touch people like Scott Fitzgerald are, both with the issue and with the voters in Wisconsin. None of that is true. And in this case, fairly narrow definition of just taking the incremental step of allowing people in Wisconsin to choose a method that works for them related to treatment for their condition, managing pain and suffering and other things. So there's a big disalignment between where the values and priorities are of people in our state and legislative leaders that are there primarily due to gerrymandered districts. And I think people are understanding that more.
We're in the State Capitol Report with Democratic Representative Gordon Hintz this morning. We're talking about what is and isn't moving through the Capitol. And a legislative task force on adoption faces criticism over bills that would eliminate parental rights if a mother uses drugs or alcohol while she's pregnant. Do you think that's a fair way to assess a parent's ability to take care of their child? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's look for a moment at the suicide prevention hotline issue. There's been this back and forth between Governor Evers' administration and the Joint Finance Committee over the release of funds for a suicide prevention program called HopeLine. This has been an issue at the Capitol for months. What is the holdup with dispensing these funds?
Well, this one's been going back and forth more in the press without action on this. How do you get this one wrong, right? I mean, this is something that should be a no-brainer that seems to be caught up in political games, and it's something that the public, you know, hates about politics. It's the thing that kind of makes people cynical. Let's fund the program. Let's get it done. I don't know what the issue with joint finance is or how the blame game started, but the fact that we're still talking about it and seem to be, you know, Republicans seem to be more interested in pointing fingers or making this an issue, is disappointing. So I can't follow the arrows on the chart on the evolution of this issue. I'm just calling to get it done.
All right. Well, let's look at these adoption bills for a moment. Eight bills related to adoption are facing resistance over concerns that they terminate parental rights too quickly. One of the bills would terminate rights if a mother uses drugs or alcohol while pregnant. The other would terminate them if a parent is incarcerated and likely to stay in prison while the child is a minor. Where do you land on these proposed changes to the law around Wisconsin adoptions?
Boy, I mean, I think the first goal should always be to do no harm. And as I understand in talking to members from the Adoption Task Force on my side, you know, they held hearings in different parts of the state. They heard from advocates on what both caution on certain forms and support for others. The bills that were actually put forward were not bills that the committee was talking about doing. It sounds like the speaker had some ideas in mind, and you know, even the chair of the task force said, well, these aren't my bills. And so we're going to get briefed on them tomorrow. They had a public hearing last week. But again, there are unintended consequences for things like you just mentioned related to penalizing existing parents. I mean, we know from advocates and others that we really do try to do everything possible to keep kids in their family, knowing that that's the best situation for them. And again, we want to make it easier for those children that do need a new and better situation, but we don't want to, do harm, before anything else.
Well, let's go to Pete now, joining us from Wanakee. Hi, Pete.
Good morning. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I had a question about the Wisconsin State Employee Compensation Plan. We're hearing that Joker asked the governor for the draft copy of that over a month ago. Just wondering if you could provide an update as to why it's taking so long or where it's being held up.
Sure. And what the caller's talking about is in the budget for the pay increases for state employees, a compensation plan has to be put together and then approved by the legislative committee. It's historically taken, you know, 2 or 3 months after the budget to get this drafted. On October 10th, I believe, the governor submitted the compensation plan to the joint committee in the legislature. It's incumbent on them to act now. And so last I checked, that's where it was in the process. So we're just waiting for the speaker and majority leader to call for the hearing on that pay plan. So that was the last I've heard. I'm glad that we're finally taking action after years of inaction and long overdue raises for state employees like yourself.
Pete, thanks for the call. Representative, you co-authored several bills last month related to chronic wasting disease. One of the bills would provide funding for the DNR to research and manage CWD. What do you want to accomplish through this legislation?
Well, first of all, is to get this back on the radar. Other states have taken far more proactive action, recognizing that this could be a disaster if unregulated throughout the state. So these bills are common sense first steps, really aimed at putting this back on the radar, part of putting science back in the DNR and, making it a priority again. Again, it was like, under Governor Walker, it was really turn the other way, ignore it. It's not an issue. And, you know, this has the potential to be devastating if, you know, remains unchecked, you know, throughout the state of Wisconsin. So let's make it a priority. Let's get it back on the radar and let's provide the resources so the Department of Natural Resources can do their job.
Representative Hintz, thank you for joining us this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me, Kate.
Representative Gordon Hintz is the Assembly Minority Leader. He's a Democrat representing Wisconsin's 54th Assembly District, which includes Oshkosh. And he's helped us out on a roundup this morning as we explored some of the legislation that is moving at the Capitol and where lawmakers can find common ground. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with a Republican lawmaker working on a new series of bills to reduce suicide rates in Wisconsin. You have a line to Representative Jesse James of Altoona. That's at 800-642-1234. News update is next. Stay with us. More State Capitol Report to come here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, you're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're going to spend some time now looking at the work of the Speaker's Task Force on Suicide Prevention. According to the State Health Services Department, more than 900 Wisconsinites died by suicide in 2017. That's the most recent data out there. And numbers have trended upward. Does this issue hit home to you? What kind of prevention programs should Wisconsin offer? How can lawmakers come together around legislation that helps prevent suicide? We're at 800-642-1234. Jesse James of Altoona represents the 68th Assembly District, which includes parts of Eau Claire County, and he's a member of the Speaker's Task Force on Suicide Prevention. Representative James, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with the special session Thursday, Governor Evers' special session on gun control legislation. We've just been talking with Representative Hintz about this. One bill would expand universal background checks. The other would create a red flag law. Here's the governor last month with a directive for the legislature.
They need to do their job, bring these two pieces of legislation to a vote, and let the vote speak for itself. It's pretty simple.
Representative James, is it that simple just to allow a vote on these bills? What needs to be done?
Well, I think first and foremost, people need to understand the processes. First of the background checks, there are background checks that are done both at the state and national level when people go and purchase firearms. The ones causing all the harm to America today are the ones that aren't following the rules and lying on the background checks or just not doing them, borrowing the firearms from friends to cause the devastation that they want to do in the violence acts. So that's part of it. The background checks, you know, there are through the CIB, through the NCIC, the National Crime Information Center, Crime Information Bureau. I should really say that instead of saying the nomenclatures. But, you know, there are checks in place for those that are the law-abiding citizens. Those that are not the law-abiding citizens obviously are the ones that have these violent tendencies and want to cause harm to everyone. Secondly, you know, the red flag laws, I've been researching, looking at other states. First and foremost, I keep an open mind on these things. However, taking any type of action regarding the Second Amendment is concerning, and I think that we need to be very careful and cautious, as well as answer questions that exist at the local level. Regarding red flag laws.
Yeah, there's research out of University of Indianapolis that found that in Indiana, after the enactment of the red flag law there in 2005, the state saw a 7.5% decrease in firearm suicides in the 10 years that followed. If the assembly wants to address suicide prevention, should it look more closely on a red flag law here and gun safety measures?
Well, I think we can take a look at it. I just don't know how successful it's going to be with the Republican-led Senate and Assembly. You know, 7.5% them are good statistics. However, there has been issues, or there has been somewhat of a decrease, from what I understand. I'm looking at my notes here. The decrease in suicides, because back in the day, the crime levels and suicide numbers were actually higher. So we are making progress. It's just a matter of us being able to invest in each other and use our brains and our hearts to help protect one another. And if we see signs or something off with our family members, our friends, our coworkers, we need to really get back. And I've said this before, the Department of Homeland Security, when they started out with their slogan of see something, say something, we need to carry this into every aspect of any kind of firearm related violence or suicide, any type of mass shooting situations or something that we see. In September, I read an article that in California, there was a group that was able to stop a mass shooting because they felt comfortable enough to call the person out. And then that ended up leading into law enforcement involvement and other federal agencies and search warrants. And they ended up stopping a mass incident. So that's the type of activity that we as Americans need to do in holding each other accountable.
Do you expect your body to gavel in and gavel out on this special session?
I don't know. Being a new representative, I'm still learning processes, and there's been mention of that, but I can't confirm or deny that.
Well, let's look at the task force. You were appointed to the Speaker Voss's Task Force on Suicide Prevention last March. What were you tasked to do?
Well, we're tasked to hold the hearings throughout our state. We had the six hearings all throughout, and we really focused on individual groups, those that were showing the highest statistics and rise of committing or dying by suicide. And so up in the Triple Valley area, obviously our focus was up here, law enforcement, our first responders, corrections officers, and military vets. We focus in the Marshfield area on farmers, and we really look at it as individual groups, and then to come up with ideas on how we can help educate and take preventative measures and just protect those that may be vulnerable in thinking or having suicidal thoughts.
We are in the State Capitol Report with Representative Jesse James, a Republican from Altoona. He's a member of the Speaker's Task Force on Suicide Prevention. You can join in should there be more suicide prevention programs in Wisconsin. Where is programming falling short? What needs to change? Are you a mental health professional? What do you think of having to take additional training on suicide prevention? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Representative James, last week the task force introduced a proposal to create a statewide suicide prevention program and provide grants for local suicide prevention programming. Where in Wisconsin are needs not being met right now?
Well, statistically, it's showing the northern half of the state. If you drew a line across around Highway 29, going from, the Hudson area straight across to Green Bay, the northern three DHS regions are where the most amount of death by suicide is happening. Obviously, there's reasons, because the southern part of the state has more resources available. And in our rural areas, the people are lacking the resources and services available. And we definitely need to look at getting more mental health professionals, possibly using more of the technology that's available. The telehealth service measures, if we can't get the mental health professionals on site, and that's very concerning, because we need to be able to take care of all of Wisconsin people and provide the services for them that are hurting.
Last month, you introduced a bill that would prevent suicide by firearms. It would give grants to organizations to train gun shop workers to notice the signs of suicide. This is a voluntary program. How would funding this bill address the gun issues?
Well, and this is the unique twist to this issue. A lot of people don't understand that there are resources available within their communities. Coming from the law enforcement world and being the lead of an agency myself, we did safekeep weapons for those that were thinking of causing harm to themselves or others. Family members, a very intricate part of this, would bring in the weapons for safekeeping, and we would temporarily safekeep the weapons until they felt it was time to get them back. If there's any kind of criminal element to it, excuse me, obviously we would get our DA's office involved and ensure that it was okay to have weapons back. So that's a huge asset that already existed. And then bringing our gun shop owners into the mix is even more critical, because they offer the temporary storage of the firearms. There's no questions asked. We don't ask the questions, even on the law enforcement side or the gun shop owner sides. We just want to be able to put this tool in the toolkit and have it available. And obviously there's strong bipartisan support on this. I want to thank Representative Melissa Sargent for her support in being the co-author with this bill.
But you're putting gun shop owners at the forefront of these issues related to suicide. Even with proper training, they're not medical professionals or mental health professionals. How can they determine whether someone is truly suicidal?
Well, you don't. Just as law enforcement can't determine if people are suicidal, we have to have the mental health professionals. And really, it's first and foremost identifying an issue that exists. You know, if there's a warning indicator that pops up, and I mean, people know their family members, people know their friends, people know their coworkers, and if something seems off, we need to be able to be comfortable enough to initiate the conversation and ask them the hard question. When we go to the doctor, part of their initial screening process now is, do you have any thoughts of harming yourself? And we need to be able to ask that same question to our loved ones or friends or anybody that we care about to be able to do that. And there, I know a gun shop right here locally that refused to sell a firearm to somebody just because of a warning sign that they had observed, and they ended up calling law enforcement and filing a report.
Pausing right there with Representative Jesse James of Altoona on the State Capitol Report. You can join in 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. You have a line to Representative Jesse James of Altoona on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about the Speaker's Task Force on Suicide Prevention. We spoke with Assembly Speaker Robin Voss 2 weeks ago. He said he wants the bills that come out of these work groups to be voted on this month. And this task force on suicide addresses a troubling issue.
The idea that the only way out of your either financial situation, a bad relationship, is to take your own life, is to make sure we have the resources for people to talk to someone.
What do you think of draft legislation to create a statewide suicide prevention program? Join in 800-642-1234. And Representative Jesse James serves on the Speaker's Task Force, and he stays with us. Let's go to the phones now. Eric is joining us from Kenosha. Hi, Eric.
Yes, hi. I'd like to know where firearms stand as a cause of suicide in Wisconsin. Are they the number one cause, number two?
Representative James?
Firearms is and was identified as the number one cause of death by suicide.
Eric, do you have a further question?
No, thank you.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Eric. Let's go to Ben now in Appleton. Hi, Ben.
Hi. I think suicide prevention line would be extremely helpful. I've tried getting counseling before, and it can take upwards of weeks to see somebody. But my main question is will there ever be any future regulation on the medicine industry? Because a lot of medicine side effects cause irrational thinking, where people are contemplating more often due to their side effects of taking their own life.
Thank you, Ben. Representative James, what would you like to add here?
Well, I think that's a very interesting point and a very good point. I think as Americans, we are over-medicating our populations, and there seems to be side effects if there's multiple medications taken at times, and the psychoactive side effects of the medications being offered is very much a concern, and we need to definitely look at that. I think that there are a number of other options that are available besides medicating ourselves.
What would those other options be?
Well, it's really, it comes down to mindset, about the feeling the pain, and being able to get steps in place on how to counteract the pains or thoughts that we are having, and then actually using the resources around us and being comfortable to do that. You know, this, we have to destigmatize suicide, and we have to have those that are having these thoughts have a portal out of their thoughts and to use everything and anything that they have around them besides just medicine.
Let's look for a moment at the suicide hotline. The Suicide Prevention Task Force wants $110,000 to be released immediately to fund a suicide prevention hotline. This money is already in the budget. The process has taken months. What do you believe delays in this type of programming does to the people of Wisconsin?
Well, I think it just shows again on government at work and how politics always plays a part in this releasing of the funds. I know that there was pressure from before in having the funds released. To be honest, I don't know why there is such an issue in releasing these funds. We're talking $110,000 to help save lives across Wisconsin. So I don't know what the root cause is of that. So that's all I can tell you.
Let's go to Anita now, joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Anita.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
My son died by suicide about 5 years ago, and I applaud any effort to raise awareness and try to do work for prevention, but I really feel that prevention begins with our healthcare system. I totally agree with all the comments about needing to destigmatize suicide, which is why we use the term died by suicide rather than committed. It's not a crime. But I feel that healthcare needs to be more all-encompassing. Mental illness so often goes hand-in-hand with addiction. I think programs need to take care of both of those together, and all of those healthcare issues need to be covered. Mental health basically is physical health. It's a brain problem.
Anita, so sorry for your loss. Representative James, this sounds, as Anita said, a much bigger issue revolving around health care and mental health care.
Yes, and Anita, I'm so sorry for your loss, and my prayers and thoughts are with you and your family as each year progresses on. It is, you know, mental health is on the rise. It's on the increase, and it is very concerning. Wisconsin as a whole, especially on the law enforcement side, before it was, we didn't have enough cops to do the job. That was last year's number one issue in our area. Now this year, the number one issue seems to be addressing those with mental health. A lieutenant from Janesville said 40% of their caseload involves mental health-related incidents.
40%.
So, Yeah, 40% of their call volume. And that's alarming. And it definitely, I just heard that last Thursday at the Attorney General's Emergency Detention Summit. And that is shocking. And it's something, as law enforcement officers, we are doing everything that we can possible, doing the crisis intervention training and the larger agencies that can support, you know, the individual officers that specifically focus on the mental health calls. That's amazing, and I applaud those efforts. But the smaller agencies, like from our neck of the woods, we don't have those resources, so we have to really invest in everybody being trained in crisis intervention. And we do need more mental health professionals. And again, what that looks like, you know, what an idea of possibly let's get some telehealth, because all school districts seem to have access to Wi-Fi broadband. Obviously, we don't all communities have it up in our neck of the woods either, but the school districts for the most part do. So is there something that we can do at the educational level, whether it's our elementary, middle schools or high schools, to have that technology available for any of the staff or the school districts that can't afford to have the psychologists or psychiatrists or social workers on scene and have it available through telehealth? That would be a huge asset for our youth and getting them comfortable. They're so used to talking to screens as it is with the way technology is today. So I think it would just be an added benefit for school districts to have that opportunity.
We're talking with State Representative Jesse James from the 68th Assembly District, which includes parts of Eau Claire County. You know, you've been a police chief for the city of Altoona. You're 11 months into your first term in office. How do you take those skills from police chief to being a lawmaker? Where are the overlaps there?
Oh, I think in every aspect. You look at, you know, the gun issues. You look at the Chapter 51, which is emergency detentions, where those that want to harm themselves and law enforcement have to detain them to force the services onto those individuals that are asking for or crying out for help. In the child foster care, child custody issues, and restraining orders, temporary restraining orders, and domestic abuse. I think all of it, the legislation, all of it touches every other part of it, and how the strain on our judicial system that exists. And you know, that's the other issue with the extreme risk protection orders. How much of a workload increase is this going to cause for our law enforcement and our judicial system that are already maxed out as it is already? So coming from the law enforcement world, it definitely brings an added benefit and added perspective to the state legislature. Absolutely.
Representative James, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Jesse James is a Republican state representative from the 68th Assembly District, which includes parts of Eau Claire County. He's also a member of the Speaker's Suicide Prevention Task Force. If you or someone you know is dealing with suicidal thoughts, call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 800-273-8255 or text HOPELINE to the National Crisis Text Line at 741-741. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.